thought I might read to you an article that was in yesterday's Age. You know, you get up in the morning, you think the world's going mad, planes being shot out of the sky, where's this all going to end? And sometimes there's some sane people who make some really relevant comments that help you make a little bit of sense out of what's going on. And certainly it makes us want to redouble our efforts in praying for the kingdom of God to come. This article is called Deciding Which Deaths Matter and Which Don't, and it's written by Wiley Darley. He's a lecturer and a commentator, I think, on 774 radio.
ABC, TV.
So I just thought I'd read it to you, and then you might want to discuss some of the points that he raises in it after I finish. He says, we judge which deaths to mourn, which to ignore, and which to rationalise on the basis of the story we want them to tell. I've been thinking a lot lately about the value of human life, about the lives so cheaply lost on MH17, about the anger and the grief this tragedy has unleashed, about the sense of sacredness and the solemn ceremony that followed it. There's something cathartic about all this. That we mark this with ritual public grieving tells us that these lives, and therefore our own lives, are sanctified, that their termination is almost blasphemous violation. On some level, this reassures us, which is probably why we pore over news coverage of such events, seizing on small harrowing details and the personal stories of the victims. But I've also been thinking a lot about why it is these lives particularly that have earned such a response. The more I heard journalists and politicians talk about 37 Australians were no longer with us, the stranger began to sound. Something of that magnitude happens just about every week on our roads, for instance. In the last week, for which we have official data, 29 people were killed this way. The youngest was 2. We held no ceremonies, and we had no public mourning of the fact that they, too, were no longer with us. Why? I don't ask critically because I'm as unmoved by the road toll as anyone. But it's surely worth understanding how it is we decide which deaths matter and which don't, which ones are galling and tragic and which ones are mere statistics. We tell ourselves we care about the loss of innocent life as though it's a cardinal unwavering principle, but the truth is we rationalise the overwhelming majority of it. What does that tell us about ourselves? Here, the most obvious counterpoint is the nightmare unfolding in Gaza. As I write this, nearly 600 people, overwhelmingly civilians, a third of whom are children, have been killed. By the time this goes to print, that number will be redundant. There's grief, there's anger, and there's some international hand-wringing, but nothing that compares with the urgency and rage surrounding MH17, even if there is twice the human cost. If you take your cues from social media on which this comparison is being relentlessly drawn, the reason for this is simple. Palestinians are not rich Westerners, and so their lives simply don't matter. No doubt there's some truth to this. Humans are tribal animals, and we're as tribal in death as we are in life. But it's not an entirely satisfactory explanation because it comes from people who would likely exempt themselves from this rule. And yet those same people have almost certainly grieved comparatively little over the thousands of South Sudanese killed in the past 6 months, or the 1.5 million that have been displaced. Should we conclude they value African lives less than a Palestinian one? It's not merely a matter of cultural affinity. Consider the Egyptian press, which has wholeheartedly embraced the Israeli offensive. Sorry, Gazans, I cannot support you until you rid yourselves of Hamas, wrote Adel Naaman in Al Watan. He was comprehensively outdone by Al Haram Azizami, who tweeted, thank you, Netanyahu, and God give us more men like you to destroy Hamas. Then she prayed for the death of all Hamas members and everyone who loves Hamas. Meanwhile, television presenter Tawfiq Okasa urged Egyptians to forget Gaza, adding for colour that Gazans are not men because they don't revolt against Hamas. That presumably includes the hospital patients or the kids playing football on the beach who have been bombed in the past week or so. This is about as thorough a dehumanisation of Gazans as you'll find anywhere in the world. Israel's media doesn't even come close, and this in a country where the Palestinian cause has been a kind of social glue for decades. But that's what happens when the sanctity of life meets the power of politics. For the Egyptian media, now effectively a propaganda arm of the government, Gaza merely represents a chance to attack the Muslim Brotherhood from which Hamas emerged. It doesn't matter who dies, it doesn't matter how many, what matters is that their lives, and especially their deaths, can be used in the service of the story they are so desperate to tell. And that, I fear, is a universal principle. It is not merely the death of innocents that moves us, even in very large numbers. It is the circumstance of it that matter. We decide which deaths to mourn, which to ignore, which to celebrate, and which to rationalise on the basis of what story we want them to tell. Palestinian deaths matter more than Sudanese ones, if you want to tell a story of Israeli aggression. Israeli deaths matter more than Palestinian ones, if you want to tell a story of Hamas terrorism. Asylum seekers' deaths at sea matter more than those on land, if you want to tell a story about people smuggling. But a death in detention trumps all of your story is about government brutality. And a death from starvation matters if you want to tell a story about global inequality, which so few people do. Everyone will insist they're merely giving innocent human lives their due. And that's true, but only in the most partial sense. These are political stories driven by political commitments. MH17 allowed us to mourn and to rage because it delivered a story we were well prepared to tell. It's easy to rage when the plot is one of Russian complicity, roguishness and cover-up. And frankly, Russia deserves the whack it's getting for its handling of the aftermath. But in my most naive moments, I hope for a world where the value of human life is universal enough that we can outrage ourselves, where we can tell the stories we don't particularly want to. The stories in which we are neither the heroes nor the victims, but the guilty. That's what we're asking of Russia. One day, someone mourning no less than we are will ask it of us. And that's the end of the article. Just sort of fairly incisive. Anyone would like to make any comments on that?
What were you pointing out, Mel?
I just wanted to read to you, Pete, from the perspective of someone who sees there's more in these situations than what people are seeing. And talking about the value of human life, you know, like he says, it's the circumstances we're interested in. There's people killed on the roads every day. We're not mourning them, per se. This has been a real threat to, global security, isn't it? Really. What did you get out of it?